doors and windows, pointing to something more or less overhead. Sophie and Michael ran to the broom cupboard, where they seized a velvet cloak each and flung them on. Sophie got the one that turned its wearer into a red-bearded man. Now she knew why Calcifer had laughed at her in the other one. Michael was a horse. But there was no time to laugh just then. Sophie dragged the door open and sped into the street, followed by the dog man, who seemed surprisingly calm about the whole thing. Michael trotted out after her with a clatter of non-existent hooves, leaving Calcifer whipping from blue to white behind them. The street was full of people looking upward. No one had time to notice things like horses coming out of houses. Sophie and Michael looked too, and found a huge cloud boiling and twisting just above the chimney tops. It was black and rotating on itself violently. White flashes that were not quite like light stabbed through the murk of it. But almost as soon as Michael and Sophie arrived, the clot of magic took on the shape of a misty bundle of fighting snakes. Then it tore in two, with a noise like an enormous cat fight. One part sped yowling across the roofs and out to sea, and the second went screaming after it. Some people retreated indoors then. Sophie and Michael joined the rush of braver people down the sloping lanes to the dockside. There everyone seemed to think the best view was to be had along the curve of the harbour wall. Sophie hobbled to get out along it too, but there was no need to go beyond the shelter of the harbour master's hut. Two clouds were hanging in the air some way out to sea, on the other side of the harbour wall, the only two clouds in the calm blue sky. It was quite easy to see them. It was equally easy to see the dark patch of storm raging on the sea between the clouds, flinging up great white-topped waves. There was an unfortunate ship caught in that storm. Its masts were beating back and forth. They could see spouts of water hitting it on all sides. The crew were desperately trying to take in the sails, but one at least had torn to flying grey rags. "Can't they have a care for that ship?" someone said indignantly. Then the wind and the waves from the storm hit the harbour wall. White water lashed over, and the brave persons out on the wall came crowding hurriedly back to the quayside, where the moored ships were heaving and grinding at their moorings. Among all this was a great deal of screaming in high singing voices. Sophie put her face out into the wind beyond the hut, where the screaming came from, and discovered that the raging magic had disturbed more than the sea and the wretched ship. A number of wet, slithery-looking ladies with flying green-brown hair were dragging themselves up onto the harbour wall, screaming and holding long, wet arms out to more screaming ladies tossing in the waves. Every one of them had a fishtail instead of legs. "Confound it!" said Sophie. "The mermaids from the curse!" That meant only two more impossible things to come true now. She looked up at the two clouds. Hal was kneeling on the left-hand one, much larger and nearer than she would have expected. He was still dressed in black. Typically enough, he was staring over his shoulder at the frantic mermaids. He was not looking at them as if he remembered they were part of the curse at all. "Keep your mind on the witch!" the horse beside Sophie yelled. The witch sprang into being, standing on the right-hand cloud, in a whirl of flame-coloured robe and streaming red hair, with her arms raised to invoke further magic. As Hal turned and looked at her, her arms came down. Hal's cloud erupted into a fountain of rose-coloured flame. Heat from it swept across the harbour, and the stones of the wall steamed. "It's all right!" gasped the horse. Hal was on the tossing, nearly sinking ship below. He was a tiny black figure now, leaning against the bucking mainmast. He let the witch know she had missed by waving at her cheekily. The witch saw him the instant he waved. Cloud, witch, and all at once became a savagely swooping red bird diving at the ship. The ship vanished. The mermaid sang a doleful scream. There was nothing but sulkily tossing water where the ship had been. But the diving bird was going too fast to stop. It plunged into the sea with a huge splash. Everyone on the quayside cheered. "I knew that wasn't a real ship, really," someone behind Sophie said. "Yes, it must have been an illusion," the horse said wisely. "It was too small." As proof that the ship had been much nearer than it looked, The waves from the splash reached the harbour wall before Michael had stopped speaking. A 20-foot green hill of water rode smoothly sideways across it, sweeping the screaming mermaids into the harbour, rolling every moored ship violently sideways and thudding in swirls round the harbour master's hut. An arm came out of the side of the horse and hauled Sophie back toward the quay. Sophie gasped and stumbled in knee-high grey water. The dogman bounded beside them, soaked to the ears. They had just reached the quay, and the boats in the harbour had all just rolled upright, when a second mountain of water rolled over the harbour wall. Out of its smooth side burst a monster. It was a long, black, clawed thing, half cat, half sea lion, and it came racing down the wall toward the quay. Another burst out of the wave as it smashed onto the harbour, long and low too, but scalier, and came racing after the first monster. Everyone realised that the fight was not over yet and splashed backward hurriedly against the sheds and houses on the quayside. Sophie fell over a rope and then a doorstep. The arm came out of the horse and dragged her upright as the two monsters streaked past in a scatter of salt water. Another wave swirled over the harbour wall, and two more monsters burst out of that. They were identical to the first two, except the scaly one was closer to the cat-like one, and the next rolling wave brought two more closer together yet. "What's going on?" Sophie squawked at this third pair racing past, shaking the stones of the jetty as they ran. "Illusions," Michael's voice said out of the horse. "Some of them. They're both trying to fool one another into chasing the wrong one." "Which is who?" said Sophie. "No idea," said the horse. Some of the onlookers found the monsters too terrifying. Many went home. Others jumped down into the rolling ships to fend them off from the quay. Sophie and Michael joined the hard corps of watchers who set off through the streets of Porthaven after the monsters. First they followed a river of seawater, then huge wet paw prints, and finally white gouges and scratches where the claws of the creatures had dug into the stones of the street. These led everyone out at the back of the town to the marshes, where Sophie and Michael had chased the shooting star. By this time, all six creatures were bounding black dots, vanishing into the flat distance. The crowd spread out into a ragged line on the bank, staring, hoping for more, and afraid of what they might see. After a while, no one could see anything but empty marsh. Nothing happened. Quite a few people were turning away to leave, when of course everyone else shouted, "Look!" A ball of pale fire rolled lazily up in the distance. It must have been enormous. The bang that went with it only reached the watchers when the fireball had become a spreading tower of smoke. The line of people all winced at the blunt thunder of it. They watched the smoke spread until it became part of the mist on the marshes. They went on watching after that, but there was simply peace and silence. The wind rattled the marsh weeds, and birds began to dare to cry again. "I reckon they must have done for one another," people said. The crowd gradually split into separate figures, hurrying away to jobs they had left half done. Sophie and Michael waited until the very last, when it was clear that it was indeed all over. Then they turned slowly back into Porthaven. Neither of them felt like speaking. Only the dog man seemed happy. He sauntered beside them so friskily that Sophie was sure he thought Hal was done for. He was so pleased with life that when they turned into the street where Hal's house was, and there happened to be a stray cat crossing the road, the dog man uttered a joyful bark and galloped after it. He chased it with a dash and a skitter straight to the castle doorstep, where it turned and glared. "Get off!" it mewed. "This is all I needed." The dog backed away, looking ashamed. Michael clattered up to the door. "Hal!" he shouted. The cat shrank to kitten size and looked very sorry for itself. "And you both look ridiculous," it said. "Open the door. I'm exhausted." Sophie opened the door and the cat crawled inside. The cat crawled to the hearth where Calcifer was down to the merest blue flicker, and, with an effort, got its front paws up onto the chair seat. There it grew, rather slowly, into howl, bent double. "Did you kill the witch?" Michael asked eagerly, taking off his cloak and becoming himself too. "No," said Howl. He turned round and flopped into the chair, where he lay looking very tired indeed. "All that on top of a cold," he croaked. "Sophie, for pity's sake, take off that horrible red beard and find the bottle of brandy in the closet, unless you've drunk it, or turned it into turpentine, of course." Sophie took off her cloak and found the brandy and a glass. Howl drank one glass off, as if it were water. Then he poured out a second glass, and instead of drinking it, he dripped it carefully on Calcifer. Calcifer flared and sizzled and seemed to revive a little. Howl poured a third glass and lay back sipping it. "Don't stand staring at me," he said. "I don't know who won. The witch is mighty hard to come at. She relies mostly on her fire demon and stays behind out of trouble. But I think we gave her something to think about, eh, Calcifer?"
"It's old,"
Calcifer said in a weak fizzle from under his logs.
"I'm stronger, but it knows things I never thought of. She's had it 100 years, and it's half killed me."
He fizzled a bit, then climbed further out of his logs to grumble.
"You might have warned me." "I did, you old fraud," Howl said wearily. "You know everything I know."
Howl lay sipping brandy while Michael found bread and sausage for them to eat. Food revived them all, except perhaps the dog man, who seemed subdued now Howl was back after all. Calcifer began to burn up and look his usual blue self.
"This won't do," Howl said. He hauled himself to his feet. "Look sharp, Michael. The witch knows we're in Porthaven. We're not only going to have to move the castle and the Kingsbury entrance now, I shall have to transfer Calcifer to the house that goes with that hat shop."
"Move me!"
Calcifer crackled. He was azure with apprehension.
"That's right," said Howl. "You have a choice between market chipping or the witch. Don't go and be difficult."
"Curses!"
wailed Calcifer, and dived to the bottom of the grate. Chapter 17, in which the moving castle moves house. Howl set to work as hard as if he had just had a week's rest. If Sophie had not seen him fight a grueling magic battle an hour ago, she would never have believed it. He and Michael dashed about, calling measurements to one another and chalking strange signs in the places where they had earlier put up metal brackets. They seemed to have to chalk every corner, including the backyard. Sophie's cubbyhole under the stairs and the odd-shaped place in the bathroom ceiling gave them quite a bit of trouble. Sophie and the dog man were pushed this way and that, and then pushed aside completely so that Michael could crawl about chalking a 5-pointed star inside a circle on the floor. Michael had done this, and was brushing dust and chalk off his knees, when Howl came racing in with patches of whitewash all over his black clothes. Sophie and the dog man were pushed aside again, so that Howl could crawl about writing signs in and around both star and circle. Sophie and the dog man went to sit on the stairs. The dog man was shivering. This did not seem to be magic he liked. Howl and Michael raced out to the yard. Howl raced back.
"Sophie!" he shouted. "Quickly! What are we going to sell in that shop?"
"Flowers," Sophie said, thinking of Mrs. Fairfax again.
"Perfect,"
said Howl, and hurried over to the door with a pot of paint and a small brush. He dipped the brush in the pot and carefully painted the blue blob yellow. He dipped again. This time the brush came out purple. He painted the green blob with it. At the third dip, the paint was orange, and the orange went over the red blob. Howl did not touch the black blob. He turned away, and the end of his sleeve went into the paint pot along with the brush.
"Botheration," said Howl, dragging it out.
The trailing tip of the sleeve was all colours of the rainbow. Hal shook it, and it was black again.
"Which suit is that, really?" Sophie asked.
"I've forgotten. Don't interrupt. The difficult part is just coming up," Hal said, rushing the paint pot back to the bench.
He picked up a small jar of powder.
"Michael, where's the silver shovel?"
Michael raced in from the yard with a big gleaming spade. The handle was wood, but the blade did seem to be solid silver.
"All set out there," he said.
Hal rested the shovel on his knee in order to chalk a sign on both handle and blade. He sprinkled red powder from the jar on it. He put a pinch of the same grains carefully in each point of the star and tipped all the rest into the middle.
"Stand clear, Michael," he said. "Everyone, stay clear. Are you ready, Calcifer?"
Calcifer emerged from between his logs in a long thread of blue flame.
"As ready as I shall ever be," he said. "You know this could kill me, don't you?"
"Look on the bright side," said Hal. "It could be me it kills. Hold on tight. 1, 2, 3.
He dug the shovel into the grate very steadily and slowly, keeping it straight and level with the bars. For a second, he juggled it gently to get it under Calcifer. Then, even more steadily and gently, he raised it. Michael was quite obviously holding his breath.
"Done it," said Howl. Logs toppled sideways. They did not seem to be burning.
Howl stood up and turned round, carrying Calcifer on the shovel. The room filled with smoke. The dogman whined and shivered. Hal coughed. He had a little trouble holding the shovel steady. Sophie's eyes were watering, and it was hard to see clearly. But as far as she could tell, Calcifer, just as he had said to her, did not have feet or legs either. He was a long, pointed blue face rooted in a faintly glowing black lump. The black lump had a dent in the front of it, which suggested at first sight that Calcifer was kneeling on tiny folded legs. But Sophie saw that was not so when the lump rocked slightly, showing it was rounded underneath. Calcifer obviously felt terribly unsafe. His orange eyes were round with fear, and he kept shooting feeble little arm-shaped flames out on either side in a useless attempt to take hold of the sides of the shovel.
"Won't be long,"
Hal choked, trying to be soothing, but he had to shut his mouth hard and stand for a moment, trying not to cough. The shovel wobbled, and Calcifer looked terrified. Hal recovered. He took a long, careful step into the chalked circle, and then another, into the centre of the five-pointed star. There, holding the shovel out level, he turned slowly round one complete turn, and Calcifer turned with him, sky blue and staring with panic. It felt as if the whole room turned with them. The dogman crouched close to Sophie. Michael staggered. Sophie felt as if their piece of the world had come loose and was swinging and jigging round in a circle sickeningly. She did not blame Calcifer for looking so frightened. Everything was still swinging and swaying as Hal took the same long, careful steps out of the star and out of the circle. He knelt down by the hearth and, with enormous care, slid Calcifer back into the grate again and packed the logs back round him. Calcifer flopped green flames uppermost. Hal leaned on the shovel and coughed. The room rocked and settled. For a few instants, while the smoke still hung everywhere, Sophie saw, to her amazement, the well-known outlines of the parlour in the house where she had been born. She knew it, even though its floor was bare boards and there were no pictures on the walls. The castle room seemed to wriggle itself into place inside the parlour, pushing it out here, pulling it in there, bringing the ceiling down to match its own beamed ceiling, until the two melted together and became the castle room again. Except perhaps it was now a bit higher and squarer than it had been.
"Have you done it, Calcifer?" coughed Howl.
"I think so," Calcifer said, rising up the chimney. He looked none the worse for his ride on the shovel. "You'd better check me, though."
Howl helped himself up on the shovel and opened the door with the yellow blob downward. Outside was the street in Market Chipping that Sophie had known all her life. People she knew were walking past in the evening, taking a stroll before supper, the way a lot of people did in summer. Howl nodded at Calcifer, shut the door, turned the knob orange down, and opened it again. A wide, weedy drive wound away from the door now, among clumps of trees most picturesquely lit sideways by the low sun. In the distance stood a grand stone gateway with statues on it.
"Where is this?" said Howl.
"An empty mansion at the end of the valley," Calcifer said rather defensively. "It's the nice house you told me to find. It's quite fine."
"I'm sure it is," Howl said. "I simply hope the real owners won't object."
He shut the door and turned the knob round to purple down.
"Now for the moving castle," he said, as he opened it again.
It was nearly dusk out there. A warm wind full of different scents blew in. Sophie saw a bank of dark leaves drift by, loaded with big purple flowers among the leaves. It spun slowly away, and its place was taken by a stand of dim white lilies and a glimpse of sunset on water beyond. The smell was so heavenly that Sophie was halfway across the room before she was aware.
"No, your long nose stays out of there until tomorrow," Howl said, and he shut the door with a snap. "That part's right on the edge of the waste. Well done, Calcifer, perfect. A nice house and lots of flowers, as ordered."
He flung the shovel down and went to bed, and he must have been tired. There were no groans, no shouts, and almost no coughing. Sophie and Michael were tired too. Michael flopped into the chair and sat stroking the dog man, staring. Sophie perched on the stool, feeling strange. They had moved. It felt the same but different, quite confusingly. And why was the moving castle now on the edge of the waste? Was it the curse pulling Howl toward the witch? Or had Howl slithered out so hard that he had come out right behind himself and turned out what most people would call honest? Sophie looked at Michael to see what he thought. Michael was asleep, and so was the dog man. Sophie looked at Calcifer instead, sleepily flickering among rosy logs with his orange eyes almost shut. She thought of Calcifer pulsing almost white with white eyes, and then of Calcifer staring anxiously as he wobbled on the shovel. He reminded her of something. The whole shape of him did.
"Calcifer," she said, "were you ever a falling star?"
Calcifer opened one orange eye at her.
"Of course," he said. "I can talk about that if you know. The contract allows me to."
"And Howl caught you?" said Sophie.
5 years ago," said Calcifer. "Out on Porthaven Marshes, just after he set up as Jenkin the Sorcerer. He chased me in 7-league boots. I was terrified of him. I was terrified anyway, because when you fall, you know you're going to die. I'd have done anything rather than die. When Howl offered to keep me alive the way humans stay alive, I suggested a contract on the spot. Neither of us knew what we were getting into. I was grateful, and Howl only offered because he was sorry for me."
"Just like Michael," said Sophie.
"What's that?"
Michael said, waking up.
"Sophie, I wish we weren't right on the edge of the waste. I didn't know we would be. I don't feel safe."
"Nobody's safe in a wizard's house," Calcifer said, feelingly.
Next morning, the door was set to black blob down, and to Sophie's great annoyance, it would not open at any setting. She wanted to see those flowers, witch or no witch. So she took out her impatience by fetching a bucket of water and scrubbing the chalked signs off the floor. Hal came in while she was doing it.
"Work, work, work," he said, stepping over Sophie as she scrubbed.
He looked a little strange. His suit was still dense black, but he had turned his hair fair again. It looked white against the black. Sophie glanced at him and thought of the curse. Hal may have been thinking of it too. He picked the skull out of the sink and held it in one hand mournfully.
"Alas, poor Yorick," he said. "She heard mermaids, so it follows there is something rotten in the state of Denmark. I've caught an everlasting cold, but luckily I am terribly dishonest. I cling to that."
He coughed pathetically, but his cold was getting better, and it did not sound very convincing. Sophie exchanged looks with the dog man, who was sitting watching her, looking as doleful as Howl.
"You should go back to Letty," she murmured.
"What's the matter?" she said to Howl. "Miss Angoria not going well?"
"Dreadfully," said Howl. "Lily Angorian has a heart like a boiled stone."
He put the skull back in the sink and shouted for Michael.
"Food! Work!" he yelled.
After breakfast, they took everything out of the broom cupboard. Then Michael and Hal knocked a hole in the side wall of it. Dust flew out of the cupboard door and strange thumpings occurred. At last they both shouted for Sophie. Sophie came, meaningly carrying a broom, and there was an archway, where the wall had been, leading to the steps that had always connected the shop and the house. Hal beckoned her to come and look at the shop. It was empty and echoing. Its floor was now tiled in black and white squares like Mrs. Pentstemon's hall, and the shelves, which had once held hats, had a vase of waxed silk roses and a small posy of velvet cowslips on them. Sophie realized she was expected to admire it, so she managed not to say anything.
"I found the flowers in the workshed, out at the back," said Hal. "Come and look at the outside."
He opened the door into the street, and the same shop bell tinkled that Sophie had heard all her life. Sophie hobbled out into the empty early morning street. The shop front had been newly painted green and yellow. Curly letters over the window said, "H. Jenkins, Fresh Flowers Daily."
"Changed your mind about common names, haven't you?" said Sophie.
"For reasons of disguise only," said Howell. "I prefer Pendragon."
"And where do the fresh flowers come from?" Sophie asked.
"You can't say that and then sell wax roses off hats."
"Wait and see," said Howell, leading the way back into the shop. They went through and out into the yard Sophie had known all her life. It was only half the size now, because Howell's yard from the moving castle took up one side of it.
Sophie looked up beyond the brick walls of Howell's yard to her own old house. It looked rather odd, because of the new window in it that belonged to Howell's bedroom, and it made Sophie feel odder still when she realized that Howell's window did not look out onto the things she saw now. She could see the window of her own old bedroom up above the shop. That made her feel odd too, because there did not seem to be any way to get up into it now. As Sophie hobbled after Howell indoors again and up the stairs to the broom cupboard, she realized she was being very gruff. Seeing her own old home this way was giving her fearsome mixed feelings.
"I think it's all very nice," she said.
"Really?"
Hal said coldly. His feelings were hurt. He did so like to be appreciated, Sophie thought, sighing, as Hal went to the castle door and turned the knob to purple down. On the other hand, she didn't think she ever praised Hal any more than Calcifer, and she wondered why she should start now. The door opened. Big bushes loaded with flowers drifted gently past and stopped so that Sophie could climb down among them. Between the bushes, lanes of long, bright green grass led in all directions. Hal and Sophie walked down the nearest, and the castle followed them, brushing petals off as it went. The castle, tall and black and misshapen though it was, blowing its peculiar little wisps of smoke from one turret or another, did not look out of place here. Magic had been at work here, Sophie knew it had, and the castle fitted somehow. The air was hot and steamy, and filled with the scent of flowers, thousands of them. Sophie nearly said the smell reminded her of the bathroom after Howl had been in it, but she bit it back. The place was truly marvellous. Between the bushes and their loads of purple, red and white flowers, the wet grass was full of smaller flowers, pink ones with only three petals, giant pansies, wild phlox, lupins of all colours, orange lilies, tall white lilies, irises and myriad others. There were creepers growing flowers big enough for hats, cornflowers, poppies and plants with strange shapes and stranger colours of leaves. Though it was not much like Sophie's dream of a garden like Mrs. Fairfax's, she forgot her gruffness and became delighted. "You see," said Howl. He swung out an arm, and his black sleeve disturbed several hundred blue butterflies feasting on a bush of yellow roses. "We can cut flowers by the armload every morning and sell them in Market Chipping with the dew still on them." At the end of that green lane, the grass became squashy. Vast orchids sprouted under the bushes. Howl and Sophie came suddenly to a steaming pool crowded with water lilies. The castle veered off sideways round the pool and drifted down another avenue lined with different flowers. "If you come out here alone, bring your stick to test the ground with," Howl said. "It's full of springs and bogs, and don't go any further that way." He pointed southeast, where the sun was a fierce white disk in the misty air. "That's the waste over there. Very hot and barren, and full of witch." "Who made these flowers right on the edge of the waste?" Sophie said. "Wizard Suliman started it a year ago," Hal said, turning toward the castle. "I think his notion was to make the waste flower and abolish the witch that way. He brought hot springs to the surface and got it growing. He was doing very nicely until the witch caught him." "Mrs. Pentstemon said some other name," Sophie said. "He came from the same place as you, didn't he?" "More or less," said Howl. "I never met him, though. I came and had another go at the place a few months later. It seemed a good idea. That's how I came to meet the witch. She objected to it."
"Why?"
said Sophie. The castle was waiting for them. "She likes to think of herself as a flower," Howl said, opening the door. "A solitary orchid blooming in the waste. Pathetic, really." Sophie took another look at the crowded flowers as she followed Howl inside. There were roses, thousands of them.
"Won't the witch know you're here?"
"I tried to do the thing she'd least expect," Howl said.
"And are you trying to find Prince Justin?" Sophie asked. But Howl slithered out of answering by racing through the broom cupboard, shouting for Michael.
Chapter 18, in which the Scarecrow and Miss Angorian reappear. They opened the flower shop the next day. As Howl had pointed out, it could not have been simpler. Every early morning, all they had to do was to open the door with the knob purple down and go out into the swimming green haze to gather flowers. It soon became a routine. Sophie took her stick and her scissors and stumped about, chatting to her stick, using it to test the squashy ground or hook down sprays of high-up choice roses. Michael took an invention of his own, which he was very proud of. It was a large tin tub with water in it, which floated in the air and followed Michael wherever he went among the bushes. The dog man went too. He had a wonderful time rushing about the wet green lanes, chasing butterflies, or trying to catch the tiny bright birds that fed on the flowers. While he dashed about, Sophie cut armloads of long irises or lilies
or frondy orange flowers, or branches of blue hibiscus. And Michael loaded the bath with orchids, roses, starry white flowers, shiny vermilion ones, or anything that caught his fancy. They all enjoyed this time. Then, before the heat in the bushes grew too intense, they took the day's flowers back to the shop and arranged them in a motley collection of jugs and buckets, which Howl had dug out of the yard. Two of the buckets were actually the 7-league boots. Nothing, Sophie thought as she arranged shocks of gladiolus in them, could show how completely Howl had lost interest in Letty. He did not care now if Sophie used them or not. Howl was nearly always missing while they gathered flowers, and the doorknob was always turned black down. He was usually back for a late breakfast, looking dreamy, still in his black clothes. He would never tell Sophie which suit the black one really was. "I'm in mourning for Mrs. Penstemon," was all he would say. And if Sophie or Michael asked why Hal was always away at that time, Hal would look injured and say, "If you want to talk to a school teacher, you have to catch her before school starts." Then he would disappear into the bathroom for the next 2 hours. Meanwhile, Sophie and Michael put on their fine clothes and opened the shop. Howl insisted on the fine clothes. He said it would attract custom. Sophie insisted they all wore aprons. And after the first few days, when the people of Market Chipping simply stared through the window and did not come into the shop became very popular. Word had gone round that Jenkins had flowers like no flowers ever seen before. People Sophie had known all her life came and bought flowers by the bundle. None of them recognised her, and that made her feel very odd. They all thought she was Howl's old mother, but Sophie had had enough of being Howl's old mother. "I'm his aunt," she told Mrs. Cesari. She became known as Aunt Jenkins. By the time Howl arrived in the shop, in a black apron to match his suit, he usually found it quite busy. He made it busier still. This was when Sophie began to be sure that the black suit was really the charmed grey and scarlet one. Any lady Howl served was sure to go away with at least twice the number of flowers she asked for. Most of the time, Howl charmed them into buying 10 times as much. Before long, Sophie noticed ladies peering in and deciding not to come into the shop when they saw Howl there. She did not blame them. If you just want a rose for a buttonhole, you do not want to be forced to buy 3 dozen orchids. She didn't discourage Howl when Howl took to spending long hours in the workshop across the yard. "I'm setting up defences against the witch before you ask," he said. "By the time I've finished, there will be no way she can get into any part of this place." There was sometimes a problem with leftover flowers. Sophie could not bear to see them wilting overnight. She found she could keep them fairly fresh if she talked to them. After that, she talked to flowers a lot. She got Michael to make her a plant nutrition spell, and she experimented in buckets in the sink and in tubs in the alcove, where she used to trim hats. She found she could keep some plants fresh for days, so of course she experimented some more. She got the soot out of the yard and planted things in it, muttering busily. She grew a navy blue rose like that, which pleased her greatly. Its buds were coal black, and its flowers opened bluer and bluer until they became almost the same blue as calcifer. Sophie was so delighted with it that she took roots from all the bags hanging on the beams and experimented with those. She told herself she'd never been happier in her life. This was not true. Something was wrong, and Sophie could not understand what. Sometimes she thought it was the way no one in Market Chipping recognised her. She did not dare go and see Martha, for fear Martha would not know her either. She did not dare tip the flowers out of the 7-league boots and go and see Letty for the same reason. She just could not bear either of her sisters to see her as an old woman. Micah went off with bunches of spare flowers to see Martha all the time. Sometimes Sophie thought that was what was the matter with her. Micah was so cheerful, and she was left on her own in the shop more and more often. But that did not seem to be quite it. Sophie enjoyed selling flowers on her own. Sometimes the trouble seemed to be Calcifer. Calcifer was bored. He had nothing to do except to keep the castle gently drifting along the lanes of grass and round the various pools and lake, and to make sure that they arrived in a new spot with new flowers every morning. His blue face was always leaning eagerly out of the grate when Sophie and Michael came in with their flowers.
"I want to see what it's like out there," he said.
Sophie brought him tasty-smelling leaves to burn, which made the castle room smell as strongly as the bathroom. But Calcifer said what he really wanted was company. They went into the shop all day and left him alone. So Sophie made Michael serve in the shop for at least an hour every morning while she went and talked to Calcifer. She invented guessing games to keep Calcifer occupied when she was busy. But Calcifer was still discontented.
"When are you going to break my contract with Howl?" he asked more and more often.
And Sophie put Calcifer off.
"I'm working on it," she said. "It won't be long now."
This was not quite true. Sophie had stopped thinking of it unless she had to. When she put together what Mrs. Pentstemon had said with all the things Howl and Calcifer had said, she found she had some strong and rather terrible ideas about that contract. She was sure that breaking it would be the end of both Howl and Calcifer. Howl might deserve it, but Calcifer did not. And since Howl seemed to be working quite hard in order to slither out of the rest of the witch's curse, Sophie wanted to do nothing unless she could help. Sometimes Sophie thought it was simply that the dog man was getting her down. He was such a doleful creature. The only time he seemed to enjoy himself was when he chased down the green lanes between the bushes every morning. For the rest of the day, he trudged gloomily about after Sophie, sighing deeply. As Sophie could do nothing about him either, she was rather glad when the weather grew hotter and hotter toward midsummer day and the dog man took to lying in patches of shade out in the yard, panting. Meanwhile, the root Sophie had planted had become quite interesting. The onion had become a small palm tree and was sprouting little onion-scented nuts. Another root grew into a sort of pink sunflower. Only one was slow to grow. When at last it put out two round green leaves, Sophie could hardly wait to see what it would grow into. The next day it looked as if it might be an orchid. It had pointed leaves spotted with mauve and a long stalk growing out of the middle with a large bud on it. The day after that, Sophie left the fresh flowers in the tin bath and hurried eagerly to the alcove to see how it was getting on. The bud had opened into a pink flower like an orchid that had been through a mangle. It was flat and joined to the stalk just below a round tip. There were four petals sprouting from a plump pink middle, two pointing downward, and two more halfway up that stuck out sideways. While Sophie stared at it, a strong scent of spring flowers warned her that Howl had come in and was standing behind her.
"What is that thing?" he said. "If you were expecting an ultraviolet violet, or an infrared geranium, you got it wrong, Mrs. Mad Scientist."
"It looks to me like a squashed baby flower," Michael said, coming to look.
It did too. Howl shot Michael an alarmed look and picked up the flower in its pot. He slid it out of the pot into his hand, where he carefully separated the white thready roots and the soot and the remains of the manure spell, until he uncovered the brown, forked root Sophie had grown it from.
I might have guessed, he said. It's mandrake root. Sophie strikes again. You do have a touch, don't you, Sophie?
He put the plant carefully back, passed it to Sophie, and went away, looking rather pale.
So that was almost all the curse come true, Sophie thought, as she went to arrange the fresh flowers in the shop window. The mandrake root had had a baby. That only left one more thing. The wind to advance an honest mind. If that meant Howell's mind had to be honest, Sophie thought, there was a chance that the curse might never come true. She told herself it served Howell right anyway, for going courting Miss Angorian every morning in a charmed suit. But she still felt alarmed and guilty. She arranged a sheaf of white lilies in a 7-league boot. She crawled into the window to get them just so, and she heard a regular clump, clump, clump from outside in the street. It was not the sound of a horse. It was the sound of a stick hitting the stones. Sophie's heart was behaving oddly, even before she dared look out of the window. There, sure enough, came the scarecrow, hopping slowly and purposefully down the centre of the street. The rags trailing from its outstretched arms were fewer and greyer, and the turnip of its face was withered into a look of determination, as if it had hopped ever since Howell hurled it away, until at last it had hopped its way back. Sophie was not the only one to be scared. The few people about that early were running away from the scarecrow as hard as they could run. But the scarecrow took no notice and hopped on. Sophie hid her face from it.
"We're not here," she told it in a fierce whisper. "You don't know we're here. You can't find us. Hop away, fast."
The clump, clump of the hopping stick slowed as the scarecrow neared the shop. Sophie wanted to scream for Howell, but all she seemed to be able to do was to go on repeating, "We're not here! Go away! Quickly!" And the hop-hopping speeded up, just as she told it to, and the scarecrow hopped its way past the shop and on through Market Chipping. Sophie thought she was going to come over queer, but she seemed just to have been holding her breath. She took a deep breath and felt shaky with relief. If the scarecrow came back, she could send it away again. Howell had gone out when Sophie went into the castle room.
"He seemed awfully upset," Michael said. Sophie looked at the door. The knob was black down.
"Not that upset," she thought. Michael went out too, to Cesare's that morning, and Sophie was alone in the shop. It was very hot. The flowers wilted in spite of the spells, and very few people seemed to want to buy any. What with this and the mandrake root and the scarecrow, all Sophie's feelings seemed to come to a head. She was downright miserable. "It may be the curse hovering to catch up with Howell," she sighed to the flowers. "But I think it's being the eldest, really. Look at me. I set out to seek my fortune, and I end up exactly where I started, and old as the hills still." Here the dog man put his glossy red snout round the door to the yard and whined. Sophie sighed. Never an hour passed without the creature checking up on her. "Yes, I'm still here," she said. "Where did you expect me to be?" The dog came inside the shop. He sat up and stretched his paws out stiffly in front of him. Sophie realized he was trying to turn into a man. Poor creature. She tried to be nice to him because he was, after all, worse off than she was. "Try harder," she said. "Put your back into it. You can be a man if you want." The dog stretched and straightened his back and strained, and just as Sophie was sure he was going to have to give up or topple over backward, he managed to rise to his hind legs and heave himself up into a distraught, ginger-haired man.
"I envy Howell," he panted. "Does that so easily. I was dog in the hedge. You helped. told Letty. I knew you. I'd keep watch. I was here before and...
He began to double up again into a dog and howled with annoyance.
With witch in shop,
he wailed, and fell forward onto his hands, growing a great deal of grey and white hair as he did so. Sophie stared at the large, shaggy dog that now stood there.
You were with the witch, she said.
She remembered now, the anxious ginger-haired man who had stared at her in horror.
Then you know who I am, and you know I'm under a spell. Does Letty know too?
The huge shaggy head nodded.
And she called you Gaston, Sophie remembered. Oh, my friend, she has made it hard for you. Fancy having all that hair in this weather. You'd better go somewhere cool.
The dog nodded again and shambled miserably into the yard.
But why did Letty send you?
Sophie wondered. She felt thoroughly put out and disturbed by this discovery. She went up the stairs and through the broom cupboard to talk to Calcifer. Calcifer was not much help.
It doesn't make any difference how many people know you're under a spell, he said. It hasn't helped the dog much, has it?
No, but...
Sophie began. But just then the castle door clicked and opened. Sophie and Calcifer looked. They saw the doorknob was still set to black down, and they expected Howl to come through it. It was hard to say which of them was more astonished when the person who slid through cautiously round the door turned out to be Miss Angorian. Miss Angorian was equally astonished.
"Oh, I beg your pardon," she said. "I thought Mr. Jenkins might be here."
"He's out," Sophie said stiffly, and she wondered where Howl had gone, if not to see Miss Angorian.
Miss Angorian let go of the door, which she had been clutching in her surprise. She left it swinging open on nothing and came pleadingly towards Sophie. Sophie found she had got up herself and come across the room. It seemed as if she was trying to block Miss Angorian off.
"Please," said Miss Angorian, "don't tell Mr. Jenkins I was here. To tell you the truth, I only encouraged him in hope of getting news of my fiancé, Ben Sullivan, you know. I'm positive Ben disappeared to the same place Mr. Jenkins keeps disappearing to, only Ben didn't come back."
"There's no Mr. Sullivan here," Sophie said, and she thought,
"That's Wizard Solomon's name. I don't believe a word of it."
"Oh, I know that," Miss Angorian said. "But this feels like the right place. Do you mind if I just look round a little to give myself some idea of the sort of life Ben's leading now?"
She hooked her sheet of black hair behind one ear and tried to walk further into the room. Sophie stood in the way. This forced Miss Angorian to tiptoe pleadingly away sideways toward the workbench.
"How very quaint," she said, looking at the bottles and the jars. "What a quaint little town," she said, looking out of the window.
"It's called Market Chipping,"
Sophie said, and she moved round and herded Miss Angorian backward toward the door.
"And what's up those stairs?"
Miss Angorian asked, pointing to the open door to the stairs.
"Howl's private room," Sophie said firmly, walking Miss Angorian away backward.
"And what's through that other open door?" Miss Angorian asked.
"A flower shop," said Sophie.
"Nosy Parker," she thought.
By this time Miss Angorian either had to back into the chair or out through the door again. She stared at Calcifer in a vague, frowning way, as if she was not sure what she was seeing, and Calcifer simply stared back without saying a word. This made Sophie feel better about being so very unfriendly. Only people who understood Calcifer were really welcome in Howl's house. But now Miss Angorian made a dive round the chair and noticed Howl's guitar leaning in its corner. She snatched it up with a gasp and turned round, holding it to her chest possessively.
"Where did you get this?"
she demanded in a low, emotional voice.
"Ben had a guitar like this. It could be Ben's.
I heard Hal bought it last winter, Sophie said, and she walked forward again, trying to scoop Miss Angorian out of her corner and through the door.
Something's happened to Ben, Miss Angorian said throbbingly. He would never have parted from his guitar. Where is he? I know he can't be dead. I'd know in my heart if he were.
Sophie wondered whether to tell Miss Angorian that the witch had caught Wizard Suliman. She looked across to see where the human skull was. She had half a mind to wave it in Miss Angorian's face and say it was Wizard Suliman's. But the skull was in the sink, hidden behind a bucket of spare ferns and lilies, and she knew that if she went over there, Miss Angorian would ooze out into the room again. Besides, it would be unkind.
"May I take this guitar?" Miss Angorian said huskily, clutching it to her. "To remind me of Ben."
The throb in Miss Angorian's voice annoyed Sophie. "No," she said. "There's no need to be so intense about it. You've no proof it was his." She hobbled close to Miss Angorian and seized the guitar by its neck. Miss Angorian stared at her over it with wide, anguished eyes. Sophie dragged. Miss Angorian hung on. The guitar gave out horrible out-of-tune jangles. Sophie jerked it out of Miss Angorian's arms. "Don't be silly," she said. "You've no right to walk into people's castles and take their guitars. I've told you, Mr. Sullivan's not here. Now go back to Wales. Go on." And she used the guitar to push Miss Angorian backward through the open door. Miss Angorian backed into the nothingness until half of her vanished.
"You're hard," she said reproachfully.
"Yes, I am," said Sophie, and slammed the door on her. She turned the knob to orange down to prevent Miss Angorian coming back, and dumped the guitar back in its corner with a firm twang. "And don't you dare tell Hal she was here," she said unreasonably to Calcifer. "I bet she came to see Hal. The rest was just a pack of lies. Wizard Suliman was settled here years ago. He probably came to get away from her beastly throbbing voice." Calcifer chuckled. "I've never seen anyone got rid of so fast," he said. This made Sophie feel both unkind and guilty. After all, she herself had walked into the castle in much the same way, and she had been twice as nosy as Miss Angorian. "Gah!" she said. She stumped into the bathroom and stared at her withered old face in the mirrors. She picked up one of the packets labelled skin and then tossed it down again. Even young and fresh, she did not think her face compared particularly well with Miss Angorian's. "Gah!" she said. "Doh!" She hobbled rapidly back and seized ferns and lilies from the sink. She hobbled them, dripping, to the shop, where she rammed them into a bucket of nutrition spell. "Be daffodils," she told them in a mad, angry, croaking voice. "Be daffodils in June, you beastly things!" The dogman put his shaggy face round the yard door. When he saw the mood Sophie was in, he backed out again hurriedly. When Michael came merrily in with a large pie a minute later, Sophie gave him such a glare that Michael instantly remembered a spell Hal had asked him to make up and fled away through the broom cupboard. "Gah!" Sophie snarled after him. She bent over her bucket again. "Be daffodils! Be daffodils!" she croaked. It did not make her feel any better that she knew it was a silly way to behave. Chapter 19, in which Sophie expresses her feelings with Weed Killer. Hal opened the shop door toward the end of the afternoon and sauntered in, whistling. He seemed to have got over the mandrake root. It did not make Sophie feel any better to find he had not gone to Wales after all. She gave him her very fiercest glare. "Merciful heavens," Hal said. "I think that turned me to stone. What's the matter?" Sophie only snarled. "What suit are you wearing?" Hal looked down at his black garments. "Does it matter?
"Yes," growled Sophie. "And don't give me that about being in mourning. Which one is it, really?"